Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
Home prices nationally rose 0.16% in February, when seasonally adjusted, according to Black Knight. That is the strongest one-month gain since May of last year. I guess that is the result of printing $350 billion of Fed confetti through the Bank Term Funding Program will do. But I want to make a distinction here. It's very important. This is only a temporary reprieve from the coming deflation and asset bust. The inexorable, overwhelming gravitational forces of deflation are going to happen first before we go to intractable and hyperinflation, which is coming. Now, right now, Wall Street wrongly thinks that the Fed launched another massive QE program. Well, they did print $350 billion over the last couple of weeks. And yes, Powell did indeed print new reserves. But it is merely doing so to keep insolvent banks from going bankrupt. It is keeping zombie banks alive, their doors open. But these troubled banks have to tap this facility and take out a one-year loan under their own volition at a high rate of interest. It is not the same as QE, which is having the Fed promise to print new money, hundreds of billions of dollars, and hand it to all the primary dealers. They have no choice. They have to participate in this program, this repo program, in an effort to cause them to front run additional central bank purchases that they know it's coming. And that sends bonds yields lower across the curve, which then causes the same banks to greatly expand credit into the system. That's not happening now. It's the opposite. Credit is evaporating from the system that was already parched. Now, if you need proof of the slowdown in growth and inflation that's coming, let's just look at the March ISM manufacturing report. That survey dropped, this is the manufacturing ISM, survey dropped to 46.3% from 47.7% in the prior month. That's pretty steep into contraction territory. That's the lowest level since May of 2020. Think about COVID, the outbreak of the pandemic. And it was the fifth decline in a row. The index for new orders dropped 2.7 points to 44.3. That's 5.7 points below a neutral market. And the employment index fell 2.2 points to 46.9, also in steep contraction territory. And this contraction in manufacturing happened before, this is a March figure now. So this is before the further tightening of credit that is to still occur from this banking crisis, the latest banking crisis, which is just in the insidious and incipient stage. We also had the ISM services report come out today, and that came in at 51.2. That was 3.9 percentage points below February's reading, and new orders plunged 10.4 percentage points. And this reading, by the way, services ISM, is barely in expansion mode. So the economy is barely growing at all. Even slightly inaccurate of late, Atlanta Fed had to cut its GDP forecast in half recently for Q1. Turning to OPEC, to talk about headaches for the Fed, OPEC cut its oil production by 1.16 million barrels per day on Monday. That was because of a 35% drop in West Texas Intermediate crude will do since last June. This is what the cartel had to do. A 35% drop in WTI crude will do that to you. Perhaps this is indicative of OPEC's understanding of the huge demand destruction that has already happened in the economy and the massive demand destruction that has yet to occur due to the upcoming global recession / depression. This cut adds to Russia's existing intentions to trim 500,000 barrels per day of its own production from February on to the end of the year, bringing the combined voluntary cuts of OPEC Plus members to excess of 1.6 million barrels per day. Higher oil prices would make Powell's job much more difficult. You know who doesn't believe in the Q1 tech rally? You know, the big tech rally we've had at least recently? You know who doesn't believe in that rally? It's the very owners of these companies. More than 1,000 insiders, which is a heck of a lot historically, 1,000 insiders sold shares of their own firms in the last 3 months. According to Jim Bianco Research, only 8 stocks in the S&P 500 are pushing the index up positive on the year. The other 492 stocks have a negative combined average return. So there is no reprieve from the bear market in general. So when you take out Meta or Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Alphabet, whatever they want to call it, Microsoft, Nvidia, and Tesla, the average pops up to 5%. But before that, take out those 8 stocks, it's negative on the year. The truth is, this insidious stock market rally in early 2023 is very narrow, and it's reserved for just a small percentage of shares, and it has been solely based on PE expansion, meaning the already expensive stock market has gotten even more expensive because prices have increased while earnings have fallen. For example, the NASDAQ PE multiple has jumped over 25 times the end of 23 earnings, while the average forecast for earnings has gone from -2% to -8%. And when you think about a multiple of 25 on earnings that are falling, you have to really step back and say, wow, this is rather thin ice that we're standing on. And I will use my model, which has been working very well, thank you, for the last couple of years. Yes, we didn't make money in 22, but we lost very little, and we're up in 23. And I will use my model, that very same model, to let me know when it's time to push the shorts, and that is getting close. But I don't want to front run my model too much and make a mistake. I make enough on my own. I don't need to force one. Let's talk about the Japanese government. This is very key. The Japanese government has nominated, and I'll try to pronounce it correctly, and I'm sure I'll mess up, Kazuo Ueda to lead its central bank. He succeeds what I like to dub Hiroshima Kuroda, but it's really Haruhiko Kuroda. He is the longest serving Kuroda, the country's longest serving central bank chief and the architect of its current disastrous yield curve control policy, otherwise affectionately known as YCC. His term ends on April 8th, thank God. Japan's GDP grew by 0.1% annualized in Q4 of last year. Inflation 4.4% and rising year over year, a 40-year high. And Japanese government bonds going out 10 years are yielding 0.4%. You see any problem there? 0.4% yield, nominal yield, on top of a 4.4% inflation rate, on top of an insolvent government? Not very good. But now you know why the Bank of Japan keeps printing unlimited amounts of yen to buy every single bond that is issued or sold. And of course, that creates even more inflation, puts more upward pressure on that 40-year high 4.4% rate of inflation, pushes real interest rates further below zero, and sends the yen lower, which pushes inflation higher. I mean, you can see it's a vicious cycle that is unsustainable. However, relaxing yield curve control has its own dangers. If the new Bank of Japan governor, who's coming in on Friday, right, or Saturday, I guess comes in on Saturday, if the new Bank of Japan governor relaxes yield curve control and allows market forces to push Japanese government bond yields much higher, it would drag yields higher across the globe. That will have a negative effect on U.S. Treasury holdings and virtually every other asset class, but it would also cause the yen to soar against the dollar, and that could possibly offset much of the potential weakness in gold. But most importantly, the yield shock would engender complete economic chaos in the debt-laden nation of Japan. That is why significantly relaxing YCC, yield curve control, is an untenable proposition. However, it is the same results, the same chaos results under perpetual yield curve control. Needless to say, I'm watching what Mr. Ueda does very closely. My guess is he will move slowly away from yield curve control, and then when the whole thing turns to be a disaster, he'll be forced to return quickly back into unlimited yen printing to cap yields, because in the end, the political calculation between very high inflation or depression, in that political calculation, inflation is always the choice. It's just more tolerable. It's easier to hide and lie about. That is, at least until inflation runs hyper. And then the only recourse is to reset the currency and default on the debt. In other words, a deflationary and cathartic purging of the entire economy. Why am I talking about that? Well, other than the fact that it could dramatically affect our investments, I want to leave you with this thought. In the 3 years leading up to the global financial crisis, bear with me, I'll tie this together, I promise. In the 3 years leading up to the global financial crisis, the total debt, public and private in the United States jumped by 25%, an unheard of, unprecedented 25% in the 3 years prior to the GFC. Well, likewise, in the 3 years ranging from 2020 through 2022, total U.S. public and private debt jumped by 24%, pretty much exactly the same amount. This means you should ignore anyone who tells you, oh, you know, the U.S. economy didn't take on much leverage and there's no imbalances and banks can't go bankrupt and blah, 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 all are overcapitalized, blah, 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 Tom Lee. This means the U.S. economy has taken on virtually the same percentage, not nominal amount of debt, the same percentage increase in debt that it did leading up to the meltdown of the entire global economy. In nominal terms, it's much more, much more. Meaning this upcoming and well-earned and well-deserved, by the way, recession should be as bad or even worse than the 08 financial crisis. I mean, after all, we have a triumvirate of asset bubbles today, stocks, bonds, and real estate, whereas we only had a housing crisis unfold 14 years ago. At this point, we have only witnessed the bond bubble start to crack significantly. The stock market remains massively overvalued, and real estate has barely even started to topple over. However, this time around, we cannot just print all of the insolvency issues away like we did in 2008. And that is because we have broken the inflation barrier, which was a 40-year high last year. And is still, as I record this podcast, three times over the Fed's target level. That means if the Fed had to return to QE and ZERP yet again, or even something even close to that, ZERP, they had to cut rates from 5% to 1% and started building the balance sheet on a permanent basis. Everyone, maybe even Tom Lee, would then be fully aware and have no doubt in their mind that the Fed is absolutely unable to adequately fight inflation without destroying the economy. Hence, the Fed, much like the Bank of Japan, must choose between intractable inflation or depression. Neither is good for stocks. So if you think the recent chaos we have seen in markets is behind us, you could not be more wrong. Unfortunately, for the buy and hold bag holders and the fully invested crowd, we have only scratched the surface of the havoc to come.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.